Model Test 1, Part 3, Listening Comprehension, Section A, Directions. In this section, you will hear 8 short conversations and 2 long conversations. At the end of each conversation, one or more questions will be asked about what was said. Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center. Question 11. Don't you think this symphony is wonderful? I could listen to it all day.
That's interesting. You're the only one that feels that way as far as I know. I'm afraid that's not my cup of tea.
Question. What does the woman mean? Question 12. That's a great dress, Cindy. I don't think I've ever seen you wear it before.
Oh, I have. It's just that it's sent back to my closet. My sister gave it to me like ages ago, and I totally forgot about it.
Question. Which of the following is true about the woman? Question 13. Now, suppose I was to stay at home and do all the housework and look after the children while my wife went out to work. What would you think about that?
If I'm going to be logical, no.
Question. What does the woman mean? Question 14. I'm trying to find someone to come with me to the new sculpture exhibit in the art museum on Saturday.
I'm not too crazy about art myself, but what about Mary? She's taken an art history course and seems to be enjoying it.
Question. What does the woman suggest the man do?
Question 15. Look at the time. I'm going to miss my bus again. Why does our boss always let us work overtime?
Don't worry. After work, I'll drive you to the stop. And if the bus has already left, I can get you to your apartment.
Question. What is the probable relationship between the two speakers? Question 16. At the rate of its being used, this computer is not going to make it through the rest of the semester.
The semester? The seller told me it could last 5 years. It can still work 2 years.
Question. What does the man say about the computer?
Question 17. Hello, I'm calling to ask about the summer position you advertise in the paper. I really like it. Is it still available?
Yes, we have received some resumes. We want to interview all the candidates. When could you come to the office for an interview?
Question. What will the man probably do? Question 18. You look so down. Maybe we can go to see a movie tonight. A good comedy might cheer you up.
Thank you very much. All these days I'm worried about my thesis proposal. It is tomorrow. I want to be better prepared.
Question. What can be inferred from the conversation?
Conversation 1.
You like living in the city, don't you?
Oh, I love it. It's so convenient. I can take the bus to work or the subway or the taxi, and there is so much to do.
I know what you mean. I'd like to live in the city too, but to live in the suburbs is better for children.
Well, there are a lot of good things about suburban life, but as a working woman, I think a city has all the conveniences, including the best food and fastest news.
But there are more trees, grass and fresh air in the suburbs.
Yeah, but living in a city, it's convenient to go everywhere. There are lots of movie houses, theatres and so on. You can take them to the suburbs on weekends.
Yeah, children are the right age. There are lots of things for them here.
You're right. They are at the library in Brooklyn and they come back home for lunch, then go uptown to the Museum of Natural History. There's so much for young people to see and do.
Not just for young people. What about me? I've never been to the Museum of Natural History.
Neither have I. When I was a child, I used to go to the Museum of Art.
I've been there several times, twice with children.
Well, I have an idea. Next weekend, we go to the Museum of Natural History.
Okay, that's really a very nice idea.
Questions 19 to 22. Are based on the conversation you have just heard.
Question 19. What are the two speakers mainly talking about?
Question 20. What does the man think of living in the suburbs?
Question 21. What do we know about the woman, according to the conversation?
Question 22. Which of the following is true, according to the conversation?
Conversation 2. I didn't see you in creative writing class today. What happened?
Oh, just a dentist appointment, that's all. Say, did we get a new assignment for next week?
Yeah, a really interesting one, actually. We're supposed to write a short story that has some sort of limitation or constraints imposed on it.
What do you mean? Like rhyming in a poem?
Well, that'll be cool. But what we write has to be prose. As prose poetry. Just to make rhyme in a poem is too easy, I guess. I think Professor Smith really wants to challenge us, to put our creativity to the test.
Well, did he give any hints about what's on his mind?
Not really, but I may have an idea about the kind of thing that he's looking for. I've just finished a really strange book by some French guy. There's not one E in that book.
A whole book without a single E? How's it possible? But wait a minute, I didn't know you can read French.
I can't. I read the English translation. But get this, there's not one E in that either.
No way. Think of the words you couldn't use.
I know, but that translator manages it. I've got the book at home if you want to check it out for yourself. What's really amazing to me is that leaving out the E in English involves a completely different group of words in French.
Sometime you have to show me that book, but right now I'd better get doing the writing for next week. I already have a couple of ideas from what you said, and I think I just might be able to work on it and make something interesting.
Questions 23 to 25 are based on the conversation you have just heard.
Question 23. What is the student's assignment to write?
Question 24. Why did the man mention a book by a French author?
Question 25. What does the man think about the book without the letter E?
Section B, Directions. In this section, you will hear three short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear some questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center.
Passage 1. The Australian jumping spider, as you can imagine, got its name for its ability to leap. But it can swim too. What's most interesting, though, is its ability to use try and error tactics when solving problems. Now the jumping spider attacks and eats other spiders. It'll sit at the edge of another spider's web and attract the spider by tapping out different signals to imitate the struggles of a trapped insect, and it'll keep changing the signals till successfully lured its prey out. Well, to see if the jumping spider could apply the same problem-solving technique, try and error, to unfamiliar situations, scientists conducted an experiment. They filled a trap full of water and then put some sand in the middle, like an island. In between the island and the edge of the trap, they put a rock. When they put the spider on the island, some tried jumping to the rock, and some tried swimming. All the spiders that successfully reached the rock either by jumping or by swimming used the same method to make it from the rock to the edge of the tree. If the spider failed to reach the rock, it was placed back on the island. But the next time they tried to leave, spiders did opposite of whatever didn't work the first time, leaping if it had swum or swimming if it had leaped. So we see the spiders using the same try and error in crossing the water as they used in hunting.
Questions 26 to 28 are based on the passage you have just heard.
Question 26. What is the talk on Australia jumping spiders mainly about?
Question 27. According to the passage, how do the Australia jumping spiders attract the other kinds of spiders?
Question 28. What would happen if the spider tried to get to the rock but failed to reach the rock?
Passage 2. I've often been requested to give suggestions about how to handle information anxiety. Now let me give you some advice. First of all, what is information anxiety? Well, as you know, we are exposed daily to books, magazines, newspapers, television, and radio. We are hit with bills, letters, and reports. All of this can cause quite a lot of anxiety. It's because we are living in the information age that we get the information every day. So today, let me give you some organizing tips that should make your life easier. First of all, when you get your mail, open it and sort it right away. Get rid of all junk inserts and then sort the mail into four categories: to do, to pay, to read, and to file. Be realistic about your reading. Check the magazines you subscribe to on a regular basis. If you find yourself falling behind in your reading, let some of those subscriptions go. And if you are one of those people who like to clip out articles to read later, then do some screening first and be sure to clip only the most important articles for reading later. You should have a filing system, but don't use your files as a dumping ground. Make it a rule to clean out your files and papers at least once a year, more often if possible. Spend 5 or 10 minutes each day cleaning up your desk and prioritizing your work for the next day. The following day will get off to a much better start if your desk is organized and you are not faced with overwhelming piles of paper. Don't use the top of your desk as a storage area. It should be a work area with plenty of room to work.
Questions 29 to 31 are based on the passage you have just heard.
Question 29. According to the speaker, what should the listeners do when they first get their mail?
Question 30. What should people do with their magazine subscriptions?
Question 31. How often does the speaker suggest that the listeners clean out their files? Passage 3. I grew up in a small town. My father raised chickens and ran a construction company. I was barely 10 years old when Dad gave me the responsibility of feeding the chickens and cleaning up the stable. He believed it was important to me to have those jobs to learn responsibility and moods. Then, when I was 22, I found a job in Nashville at a country music club called the Nashville Palace. I washed dishes and cooked from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m., and then went on stage and sang until 2 in the morning. It wasn't long before I became known as a singing cook. I had been rejected so many times by record companies that it was hard not to be discouraged. One night, a woman executive from a company named Warner Brothers Records came to hear me sing. When the show was over, we sat down and talked, and after she left, I said to myself it was one more rejection. A few weeks later, my manager received a phone call. Warner Brothers wanted to sign me to a record deal. Soon after, I released my first record in June 1986. It sold over 2 million copies. My best efforts had gone into every job I ever held. It was a sense of responsibility that made me feel like a man. Knowing that I had done my best filled me with pride. I still feel that was today, even though I have become a well-known singer.
Questions 32 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard.
Question 32. Why was the speaker once known as the singing cook?
Question 33. Where did the speaker work just before he became a professional singer?
Question 34. Who first recognized his talents and offered him a big deal?
Question 35. What made the speaker proud of himself?
Section C. Directions. In this section, you will hear a passage three times. When the passage is read for the first time, you should listen carefully for its general idea. When the passage is read for the second time, you are required to fill in the blanks numbered from 36 to 43 with the exact words you have just heard. For blanks numbered from 44 to 46, you are required to fill in the missing information. For these blanks, you can either use the exact words you have just heard or write down the main points in your own words. Finally, when the passage is read for the third time, you should check what you have written. Now listen to the passage.
During McDonald's early years, French fries were made from scratch every day. Russet Burbank potatoes were peeled, cut into shoestrings, and fried in its kitchens. As the chain expanded nationwide in the mid-1960s, it sought to cut labor costs, reduce the number of suppliers, and ensure that its fries tasted the same at every restaurant. McDonald's began switching to frozen French fries in 1966, and few customers noticed the difference. Nevertheless, the change had a profound effect on the nation's agriculture and diet. A familiar food had been transformed into a highly processed industrial commodity. McDonald's fries now come from huge manufacturing plants that can process 2 million pounds of potatoes a day. The rapid expansion of McDonald's and the popularity of its low-cost, mass-produced fries changed the way Americans eat. The taste of McDonald's French fries played a crucial role in the chain's success. Fries are much more profitable than hamburgers and was long praised by customers, competitors, and even food critics. Their distinctive taste does not stem from the kind of potatoes that McDonald's buys, the technology that processes them, or the restaurant equipment that fries them. Other chains use Russet Burbank, buy their French fries from the same large processing companies, and have similar fryers in their restaurant kitchens. The taste of a French fry is largely determined by the cooking oil. For decades, McDonald's cooked its French fries in a mixture of about 7% cottonseed oil and 93% beef fat. The mixture gave the fries their unique flavor.
Now the passage will be read again.
During McDonald's early years, French fries were made from scratch every day. Russet Burbank potatoes were peeled, cut into shoestrings, and fried in its kitchens. As the chain expanded nationwide in the mid-1960s, it sought to cut labor costs, reduce the number of suppliers, and ensure that its fries tasted the same at every restaurant. McDonald's began switching to frozen French fries in 1966, and few customers noticed the difference. Nevertheless, the change had a profound effect on the nation's agriculture and diet. A familiar food had been transformed into a highly processed industrial commodity. McDonald's fries now come from huge manufacturing plants that can process 2 million pounds of potatoes a day. The rapid expansion of McDonald's and the popularity of its low-cost, mass-produced fries changed the way Americans eat. The taste of McDonald's French fries played a crucial role in the chain's success. Fries are much more profitable than hamburgers and was long praised by customers, competitors, and even food critics. Their distinctive taste does not stem from the kind of potatoes that McDonald's buys. the technology that processes them or the restaurant equipment that fries them. Other chains use Russet Burbank, buy their French fries from the same large processing companies and have similar fryers in their restaurant kitchens. The taste of a French fry is largely determined by the cooking oil. For decades, McDonald's cooked its French fries in a mixture of about 7% cottonseed oil and 93% beef fat. The mixture gave the fries their unique flavor.
Now the passage will be read for the third time.
During McDonald's early years, French fries were made from scratch every day. Russet Burbank potatoes were peeled, cut into shoestrings, and fried in its kitchens. As the chain expanded nationwide in the mid-1960s, it sought to cut labor costs, reduce the number of suppliers, and ensure that its fries tasted the same at every restaurant. McDonald's began switching to frozen French fries in 1966, and few customers noticed the difference. Nevertheless, the change had a profound effect on the nation's agriculture and diet. A familiar food had been transformed into a highly processed industrial commodity. McDonald's fries now come from huge manufacturing plants that can process 2 million pounds of potatoes a day. The rapid expansion of McDonald's and the popularity of its low-cost, mass-produced fries changed the way Americans eat. The taste of McDonald's French fries played a crucial role in the chain's success. Fries are much more profitable than hamburgers and was long praised by customers, competitors, and even food critics. Their distinctive taste does not stem from the kind of potatoes that McDonald's buys, the technology that processes them, or the restaurant equipment that fries them. Other chains use Russet Burbank, buy their French fries from the same large processing companies, and have similar fryers in their restaurant kitchens. The taste of a French fry is largely determined by the cooking oil. For decades, McDonald's cooked its French fries in a mixture of about 7% cottonseed oil and 93% beef fat. The mixture gave the fries their unique flavor.